Good morning by tuning in to WBCX, the voice of Brunel, 89.1 on your FM dial at 9 a.m. on Tuesday morning. You have just joined the Communication Corner. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. And please note that our interviews are rebroadcasted on Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. Our unofficial motto in the Communication Corner could easily be Daniel Webster's statement, "If I were to lose all of my possessions except one, I would keep the power of communication, for by it I would soon regain all of the rest." Besides welcoming you, I welcome, as I do every week, Christina Rhodes, WBCX's general manager and producer of this program. Her highly professional assistance means that I don't have to be dealing with the control board while I interview our outstanding guest, and Christina, that's a wonderful advantage I'm always grateful for. Be sure to catch Christina's WBCX program on Monday afternoons at 3 o'clock, Ocean Breeze. Listen to it. And you'll find yourself visualizing a walk on a tropical beach where you have dreamed about vacationing. We'll begin today's program with a description of a problem that many of us are facing, the scarcity of jobs in America for people who want to work. Then we'll spend most of the program finding out how to succeed in this tight job market as we talk with an internationally acclaimed career and job expert. I'll introduce her in a couple of minutes. First of all, a couple of statistics that will wake us up definitely. From the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there are now in America 14.8 million unemployed. There are 6.1 million who have been unemployed, what's characterized as long-term, 27 weeks or longer. The national percentage of unemployment, 9.6% nationally. Georgia is at 10% unemployment. No, we're not the highest. Nevada is the highest at 14.4%. Well, since we're broadcasting from a university campus, let's see how the job market is impacting college students. I'll share with you an article from Jessica Dickler that was posted on CNNMoney.com. Jessica writes, "Getting a degree used to be a stepping stone to limitless career opportunities. Now it's more of a hiatus from living under your parents' roof." She continues, "Stubbornly high unemployment, nearly 15% for those ages 20 to 24, has made finding a job nearly impossible, and without a job, there's nowhere for these young adults to go but back to their old bedrooms." And Jessica says, somewhat whimsically, "Meet the boomerangers." 85% of college seniors, get that, 85% of college seniors planned to move back home with their parents after graduation last May. That rate has steadily risen from 67% in 2006. Mallory Jaroski, 22, graduated from Penn State University in May, but has been living at home with her mother while looking for a job in press relations. "It's not bad living with my mom," she says, "but I feel like a little kid. I have a little bed and a little room." The article goes on to conclude, "There's almost an expectation that kids will move back home. There is no stigma attached," one expert said. "The thought now is to move home for 6 to 12 months, but in reality, those young adults will be home for a year and a half or longer. Even if they have jobs, they still are living at home." Okay, that's the problem, and we could say much more about it. But now for solutions. And for solutions, we're turning to a recognized career and job search expert, recognized not only nationally, but also internationally. I'm very happy to welcome now to the Communication Corner, Lori Davila. Lori, we're glad to have you.
Glad to be here, Bill. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And you're going to help us with the problem that we have described. Let's begin with something that's well beyond the college scene. We all have been reading and hearing in the media about the special problems that applicants 50 years old or older are having in trying to find a job. And, of course, there are thousands of them in the job market, many of them who thought they'd never be in the job market again. 3 years ago, there were so many who thought they had the right job and it would be their job for life. It was secure. They have not done a job interview. They've not written a resume in years. They're really up against it. Tell us, what are the special guidelines that you would suggest for applicants for the job market who are 50 years old or older?
Oh, great question, Bill. I appreciate that one. I get it almost on a daily basis. Where do I start here? I believe that you really have to not focus on that problem. You know, every day people come to me and say, I'm too old, I'm too young, I don't have the education, I don't have this, I don't have that. Step number one, stop focusing on the negativity. When I was laid off, and I've been there too.
I've been there, done that.
Okay, so the first thing that I did was I ignored all the comments that people shared with me, the reasons why I could not make a certain job transition that I wanted to make. I ignored them because deep down inside, I knew, I had this sort of inner knowing, calling, if you will, that I had a special gift to deliver to the world. There was a need out there, and I was going to find the right audience. So when I'll give you a specifics. When I was laid off from my marketing career, I decided that I wanted to go into career coaching. I went to all the career centers at the various universities around town because I assumed that only college students need this help. Boy, was I wrong, right? But they all told me, you can't do this unless you have a master's in counseling. You can't do this unless you have a master's in counseling. I could have crawled under a rock, and I could have just, you know, gotten rid of that dream. But instead, I found another way, because I didn't want to go back to school at that point. I found another way to realize my dream, and it was working with corporate people in outplacement. And my career just skyrocketed from there. My point being, get over the fact you're too old, you're too young, you don't have a master's. Those are excuses. Get rid of the excuses.
One of the things that we have talked about many times in the Communication Corner is that before you can talk effectively with anyone else, you have to have a very good affirmative talk with yourself over and over.
Exactly. And, you know, of all those statistics you read in the beginning, one of the first times I'm hearing them, believe it or not, I don't listen to those statistics. They're wonderful. I mean, they're out there. You can focus on them. I know it's kind of reality. However, I don't focus on them. I don't listen to them. And my clients that do well don't listen to them either. So, yes, you have to have that inner talk with yourself and focus on the positive.
Well, to make a comparison here,
yes.
You drove over to Gainesville, Georgia from Atlanta this morning. You didn't pull out a book and read about how many traffic accidents there have been this year on that highway.
I was focused on the incredible sunrise that I saw coming up 85 and not 85.
Right.
It was beautiful.
But whatever we're trying to do, if we center our attention on what our limitations are, that's going to show when we apply for a job, won't it?
Absolutely. And you're right. The hiring manager will see it right away that you believe that you're too old, you can't do this job. But what if you instead looked at your incredible experience that you have, obtained over the years, for example?
Well, before we leave that topic of a person 50 years old or older who is applying for a job, and certainly there's some in their 60s now. Is there any particular advice that somebody is preparing, who is preparing their resume, who's in the 50s or their 60s? Is there any special advice you give them about what to put or what to exclude on their resume?
That's a very good question. In fact, it's one of the major questions I get all the time. You know, resumes are read in about 10 seconds. So you have to grab someone's attention in that first half of the first page with what I call those gems that you have. I find that everybody hides their gems. And it's not until I interview somebody and I pull that information out of them. I'll give you an example. And by the way, these gems are very rarely found on resumes unless you point it out to people. So, for example, a marketing executive of a very large shopping center, when I was talking with her, I learned that she would spend a lot of time on CNN headline news. She was called repeatedly to give updates and reports about shopping and things of that nature. So that was not even on page two of her resume. You know, that just elevated her to become a real expert in her field, for example. Another person I spoke to last week, her passion is photography. But she excluded from her resume the fact that she takes photographs for her employer, who is an exclusive car manufacturer. In fact, she was at Pebble Beach about 2 weeks ago, and she was photographing Jay Leno and Arnold Schwarzenegger in this new model car, and the company is using her photographs in their magazines. That was excluded from her resume.
What is it? Is it because they don't recognize the importance of great events like that, or is it because maybe they're reticent to talk about themselves and are afraid they might look like they're bragging?
I think we all have that problem. And unless we have someone else that's able to pull that out, I mean, I'm always blown away when I actually ask people questions. For example, look back on your career and what are two or three things that you're most proud of? That's a really good question to get people to start talking about those things. So ask yourself that question and find the relevancy to what you want to do next and have that scream out in your resume in that first half of the first page so that people will see it in that 10-second glance.
Maybe we could put it this way, and I'd like to see whether you agree. An employer is not going to buy experience. An employer is going to hire you because of value.
Absolutely. What can you do for me today? And as we all know in this economy, we need very specific skills and to help organizations.
So don't hide that. Don't hide your value.
That's right. That's the number one thing to bring out. Absolutely.
Well, moving away from the 50 and 60-year-olds, although still including them, but
yes,
getting more general now, when an individual is seeking a job, Laurie, how can he or she determine which profession or job most closely matches their skills and interest? And you and I both know that when you lose a job, mm-hmm, you and I both had the same experience, that that's not all bad. It's a time for you to really discover what your strengths are, what your major assets are, and then find the right fit for that. So to the person who's looking for a job, what would you say to them about how then do you identify your major skills and interests that will help you not only succeed in the job market, but mm-hmm, be happier and more productive in life?
Right. That's another good question. I think everybody is evaluating that today. You know, one good tool, there are career assessments out there. There's many of them, and there's so many that are free, by the way. And I always recommend that you start there because it will give you some insights that you may or may not understand about yourself. Secondly, you can just ask yourself again basic questions. Look back on your career. What did you love to do? When did you have those moments in time that you were just losing track of time and loving every minute of it? What were you engaged in?
An aha moment.
Absolutely. And maybe it was something that wasn't work-related. You know, look at your entire life and start, you know, taking note of that. Because when you're passionate about something, you're motivated. And in today's workplace, in order to succeed, you need to have that internal motivation. Absolutely.
I was interested in reading some of your bio sketch, Laurie, where you said that in a previous job that even though you were succeeding, you found that you became a clock watcher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Interestingly enough, when you find what you really want to do, as you and I have, instead of watching the clock and wondering why it doesn't move, you look at the clock and you say, oh my gosh, I've only got 5 more hours I can stay awake and work on this.
Yeah, that's where I think you and I are today, enjoying this radio interview. But, you know, the funny thing about human beings, because we may end up in our dream job, but you know what? We always have this constant sort of desire for change, to want something new. And that's something to really note about ourselves, because we can get that dream job, we can have that dream lifestyle, but once you're there and you become satisfied, you become a clock watcher. Don't get satisfied. You always have a craving for doing something new, more, greater. That desire is always there. So, you know, tug into that.
It's wonderful when, instead of saying, when will this day end, you say, boy, this is a magnificent day with all kinds of opportunities.
Yes, absolutely.
In case you're just joining us in the Communication Corner on WBCX 89.1 FM, I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. We're talking today about jobs and careers, and we certainly brought in the right expert for that, Laurie Davila. Laurie, recently a potential employer told me that he hosted a table at a job fair, and you attend these, I'm sure, and you see a lot of them. You're very familiar with the setting. This potential employer, not of mine, but of the people there, said that more than 1,000 applicants showed up seeking highly professional positions, and he said to me, Bill, you may not believe this, but 60% of those applicants who showed up, 60% of the 1,000 applicants wore shorts to this job fair. Now, what I would ask you is, how could a job, no, I'm not kidding, how could a job seeker be that uninformed about appropriate professional attire?
Boy, I was at a recent job fair and people were dressed fairly nice. I haven't seen that. However, you know, maybe they're just used to, if you go into companies today and some of the highly innovative companies, it's amazing what you see in terms of dress. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they're just kind of used to that environment. And they've never looked for a job, never had to look for a job. And not only dress, but there's a lot of things people are unaware of. They don't know how to market themselves. They don't know what it takes to build relationships with other people. They don't know how to dress. They don't know what to say. It's frightening. They think because there's job boards out on the internet that that's the one way to look for a job or to go to these job fairs. Those are just a small piece of it. But that's certainly evidence that they would show up that way. Says a lot about the lack of information that's out there to help these job seekers today.
Well, I agree with you that certainly dress, professional dress standards have changed. You and I know how years ago, even a decade ago, when you would go into a bank, all the men were wearing three-piece suits, if three-piece suits were in at the time, or at least they were wearing a suit. And now, when I go to a bank, my bank, as a customer, I don't feel that I have to wear a tie because nobody in there is wearing anymore. So certainly standards have changed. They've changed when you attend religious services, coat and tie, even flights. My gosh, years ago when you and I first started flying commercial, you were wearing heels and I was wearing a coat and tie. Mm-hmm. Now we're kind of glad if the guy sitting beside us has a full shirt on instead of just an undershirt. Yes, they have changed. But you and I go back to the times before that we've talked about first impressions. Yes, the way a person speaks is something. Yes, their resume counts. But the very first impression, a lot of it is their attire, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
You've got to pay close attention to that.
Yeah.
Laurie, I know that, as we've already observed, these are very tense times in the job market. One of your trademarks, which I enjoyed watching on YouTube even, is something called laughter yoga.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Tell us, yes, we need some laughs in this job market. Tell us what laughter yoga is all about, please.
Well, let's see. There was a doctor in India writing a paper about the benefits of laughter to one's overall health and well-being. And in writing this paper, he came up with an idea, and he went to a beach or a town center, I'm not quite sure, and he got a bunch of people together, and just they all started laughing. And it just took off. And now I think there's 5,000 laughter clubs around the world in over 50 countries. When I heard this, I was so intrigued because to laugh for no reason, I always had a desire to get up on stage and get a room of people to laugh, but I don't see myself as a comedian. So I do this when I speak to job seekers, because when they go, when you go into a room of job seekers, you feel a lot of negativity. You feel a lot of fear in that room.
It's kind of morbid.
Absolutely. And the number one thing I teach people is attitude. You know, positive thinking. We talked about that earlier. So we do a couple of laughter exercises together as a group, and within 2 or 3 minutes, everything changes. And it's just wonderful to see. You know, we all can laugh no matter what's going on in our lives. So we should all make it a practice, really. It does affect our health and well-being in a positive way.
Yes, and laughter can set the tone even for an interview.
Oh, I have a story to tell you. Can I share
Please
a funny
do.
Story?
Please do.
This is unbelievable. A couple of days ago, I had a client who desperately wants this particular job with this particular company. It's her dream job. She was having a telephone interview with the hiring manager. 2 minutes before the interview was to take place, the fire department shows up at her house. And there was some kind of alarm that went off, and she knew nothing about it. She went on with her interview, very stressed out, I believe, and allowed her daughter to handle the firemen. What ended up happening was her neighbor saw the barbecue grill. Her husband was barbecuing. But here's the funny part of the story. She didn't tell the guy that she was interviewing with for fear of not getting the job. When I'm a big believer, you've got to know who you're talking to. When I went on LinkedIn and looked at his profile, would you believe that one of his passions is firefighting? He's a volunteer firefighter.
Oh.
So I instructed her today in a follow-up interview to start off the conversation with that story. And she texted me this morning, and she said that the interview went phenomenal, and she really believes she's going to go on to the next round. So there you go.
Well, this moves us to advice that I know you often give and is very valuable, and that is you don't go in talking necessarily about your interest. You talk about your interviewer's interest and that company's interest.
Boy, you've hit on a topic that is what I focus on today, period. Because, yes, it's a tough job market out there, right? But in order to have other people interested in you, in order for you to truly impress other people, there's only one way to do it, okay? If you get other people to talk about themselves, they themselves are interested in themselves, you become very interesting. So you ask them a lot of questions about themselves to get them to talk about what's important to them, get to their core motivation, and now they are totally interested in you. So another way to say that, was that a tongue twister? When you lead with what you're excited about, they may ask some questions. When you talk about yourself, they're not interested. When you get other people to talk about themselves, they become very interested in you. Now, this may sound funny in an interview because, yes, you do have to answer questions. However, if you, like I instructed my client to ask him, this man, about his firefighting interests, and I know what happens is they're going to create a connection, a bond, a friendship. And that's what you're going for in today's marketplace. Because when you create that connection, that friendship, that genuine, you know, me toos, I call them, they'll move mountains for you. It's all about friendships and connections.
What was it I heard years ago? A gossip is someone who talks about everybody else. A bore is someone who talks about himself. And a great conversationalist is somebody who talks about you.
Yes, or just listens.
That's right.
Really, this is the number one differentiating factor in today's marketplace. The more friends you make, the more friends you have out there, the better the opportunities are going to come your way.
One of the things many of us in the job-seeking arena are thinking is, well, I suppose I'd better get a headhunter. I know that they're out there, but I don't know which ones are reputable. I don't know which ones would be productive for me. How does a person go about finding a headhunter if, in fact, that would be helpful?
Yeah, that's another good question. One thing I will caution people on is that you cannot count on a headhunter or a recruiter because they are working for the company. They're not working for you. I hear so many people frustrated that their headhunter has not called them back or, you know, communicated with them. Well, that's because they're not working for you. Okay, so that's the first thing to remember. There's my favorite resource. Can I say the name of the book? It's probably in every public library, and it's a big red book. And I don't know the exact name, but it's Kennedy Information's, I believe, book about recruiters. And they also have a resource online. And what you do is you fill in the blanks. You know, you find targeted recruiters in your industry, in your profession, the ones that know the opportunities in your field. So that's really important.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Laurie, here's the question that I want to have you address. You advise people to abandon what any of us would recognize as the old-fashioned way of job seeking. I think that's a phrase you use. You describe that obsolete method, and you tell the approach that we should take instead. So when we come back after a short break, that's what I want us to address. What's the old-fashioned method that we've relied on that maybe once worked, now it's obsolete? What should we do instead? Back in a couple of minutes in the Communication Corner.
Over 30 years of quality music and programming, WBCX 89.1, the voice of Brenau.
Real stories from Brenau University students.
9 years ago, I had to leave college after I had my daughter. Ever since, I've talked about going back to school, but it's not like I'm some 20-year-old college kid anymore. I work full-time, and as a single mom, it was just hard for me to take the leap. It took a lot of guts to walk into a classroom again. Let me tell you, once I walked through the door, I felt this great sense of relief. All my Brenau classmates had families, full-time jobs, busy lives. We were in the same boat. I've taken classes for a year now, and I can tell you this, Brenau's like family. Your fellow students support you, your professors cheer you on. It's a wonderful feeling being back in school. I did it. You can too.
Classes in Atlanta, Gainesville, and online start every 8 weeks. Register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, our support, your success.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on The Voice of Brenau.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show can help those with seniors and their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
I don't know about you, but I just love books, and there's thousands of good, used, gently handled, and loved books available at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market Building on the square in downtown Gainesville. Next Chapter Bookstore is operated by Our Neighbor and offers housing and opportunities for men and women with disabilities. If you need more space for some more loved books, you can donate as well. Bring them by, and they'll be glad to help you. Look for more books and good books at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market on the square in downtown Gainesville.
Sean Miller here. Be sure to join me every Sunday for music from artists like Us Three, Cantaloupe,
Killer Joe,
The Manhattan Transfer, that's Killer Joe, The Yellow Jackets, Imperial Strut. That's every Sunday evening from 6 to 10 right here on WBCX 89.1, The Voice of Brenau.
Welcome back to the second half of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, interviewing today someone with marvelous advice about careers and job seeking, Lori Davila from Atlanta. And before the break, we gave Lori a little bit of warning about what we would ask her to respond to, and that is, Lori, what is the old-fashioned way of job seeking that once may have worked quite well? It's recognized now as obsolete, and what should we do instead?
Yeah, well, the old-fashioned way of doing things is to update your resume and to put it in the mail and send it to employers and sit at home and wait for the phone to ring. And by the way, back then, I can even visualize the letters I used to get. You know, thank you letters from Delta Airlines, Coca-Cola, whomever I was applying to. Thank you for your interest. But, you know, employers are not responding anymore because of the high volumes.
Let me throw one in here quickly before you go ahead. We like to share our personal incidents. One I had was, and this was maybe 10 years ago, I got a rejection letter from an institution that I hadn't even applied for.
Oh, boy.
I thought, boy, has my career taken a nosedive. I don't even apply, and they're rejecting me.
That's funny. So, unfortunately, a lot of people out there today are still doing this, although they're just applying on the job boards. They're applying it online, and they're waiting at home for the phone to ring. That's a very, very passive approach. And I tell people, if you get one interview in 6 months using that approach, that's an outstanding result. So remember that, okay? I've been doing this work for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I can count on maybe two hands how many people that I know have actually gotten a job using that approach, job boards. Now, I'm not saying don't use job boards. I'm saying if you look at your job search as 100% of your time, you know, spend maybe 10 or 15% of your time applying online with the job boards. That's it.
It's just one other method.
That's right. The other 10 or 15% of your time, yes, go ahead and do an outreach campaign to the targeted recruiters that we talked about before the break. So you definitely want to touch base with them. Don't expect a lot of response from them either. Where you need to spend all of your time, 110% or 80%, whatever the numbers are, is networking and going direct. Now, people today are frightened by the word of networking. They don't know how to do it. I hear the same things. I don't like to ask people for help. I'm uncomfortable with it. So they'd prefer to sit at home and wait for the phone to ring and let their kids and their wife and their, you know, their husbands and people lose their house. I mean, so there are easy ways to go about this. And one of the greatest tools where I see a lot of success today is LinkedIn. So if you're not on LinkedIn, you better get yourself on LinkedIn immediately.
This is an online social media site.
And the reason it's my favorite is it's for professional exchanges. So you're not going to see a lot on there about, you know, kids' birthday parties and things like that.
What the cat ate today.
That's right. You're going to see people's resumes, basically, what they've done in the past. And so it's very, you know, professional. And there's some very creative ways of using LinkedIn to search for people that would immediately resonate with what you do or want to do. And an example, I was working with somebody whose passion was what's called servant leadership. He served the people that serve the clients in his organizations. So we used LinkedIn and we used a keyword of servant leadership. And we found over 200 and some odd people in Atlanta, that was his target, of other people that had either that in their title or their description, or maybe they were in a group that had something to do with servant leadership. So you're looking for connections. You're looking for a reason to contact somebody, something that will resonate with them right away.
One of my early guests in the Communication Corner is a social media expert from Atlanta. One of her comments to me was that if you are seeking a job and you're not on LinkedIn, the person that you're interviewing with might think you're not all that savvy, might wonder why.
That's a good point, because companies today are more and more looking for people that have these skills. That's an absolute good. I hadn't thought about that. The other good reason to be on LinkedIn is I hear there's almost a million recruiters lurking through there every day looking for you. So you must be on LinkedIn.
I've found, and I'd like your comment on this, I've found that if you're going to be on LinkedIn, join groups that are relevant. For example, your alma maters, that's a good group. Your interest groups. My interest is golf, so I joined some golf groups. Your fraternity, if you were a fraternity or sorority member. For you, it could be boating. It could be New Orleans Saints.
There you go.
It could be Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
Join groups, and not only join them, but be the person who starts a discussion within the group. And when you are a person who starts a discussion, suddenly you'll have people responding to that. And guess what? When you send them an invitation to link in with you, they will accept it. They know you.
That's right. Yes, to do whatever you can to show your interest, expertise. You know, it's all about interaction today online. So, yes, absolutely.
Let's talk not only, Laurie, about the online networking, which is so valuable, but let's talk about the in-person networking we do as well. I'm a strong believer in networking myself. There are a couple of phrases I've heard. One is that networking beats not working.
That's a good one.
And another one is that networking determines your net worth, which in many ways it does. So, yes, there are many great places that we can network online. LinkedIn, I agree, would be at the top of the list professionally. And yet, what do we do to network when we're away from our computer?
Yeah. In fact, that's the most important place to network. So I say LinkedIn is a good tool to at least look for people that you want to network with. That's really all it's for. You don't want to do the actual networking online. Networking is most effective in person, over the telephone. But the point is, if you focus on simply building a new friend, there's nothing more important than that. I know you and I met on Facebook, and we've stayed in touch for months, and here we are. I feel like we're buddies.
Yes.
We're friends, and you know, we will help each other in the long run. So to start, you use LinkedIn to maybe initiate a meeting in person or on the phone. That's really all it's for. But when most people struggle with, well, how do I approach somebody? What do I say? And you start as if you're talking to a friend. Maybe it's a genuine compliment. You've read through their profile and they've inspired you about something they've done in the past. Or maybe there's some folks that have shared their testimonials on LinkedIn or other places, and you're so impressed by what people are saying. So you either give a compliment, you tell them how they've inspired you, you look for something in common, which is a me too. Me too. You know, maybe we're from the same alma mater or something. The strongest connection to start with somebody is a referral. I could have come to you and said, you know, John Doe suggested we might be, there may be a good reason for us to meet and get to know each other. But without that, in its absence, those are some things you can do to at least start the conversation.
And again, comparing what people used to do, the old standard was if you went to a business after hours reception, mm-hmm. you'd make sure you had 50 business cards. Mm-hmm. You'd push them in everybody's face. You would talk about, here's what I do. You and I have to get together for lunch or coffee. Mm-hmm. When can I make my appointment? You pull out the calendar. That's a very direct and usually offensive mm-hmm. turnoff. It's a much more gradual event now. In fact, talk a little bit, please, about what you were telling me before the program about relationship marketing.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because the next point is always talk in yous and not Y-O-Us and not I's in your vocabulary. Mm. And so you want to ask somebody questions and you be a good listener. Ask them questions about their career, things they care about, their passions, their family. What do they do in their spare time? Get them to talk about what they love to talk about. Ask them, and then you dig deeper to get to their core motivation. You know, what did you really like about your last job? What do you love doing? What is your core motivation? Why are you in this profession? Why are you in this business? What are you trying to accomplish? You start getting people to open up with you. You build a friendship, a connection, a bond. They will move mountains for you. They will want to refer you to other people they know that could use your talents and great communication skills. They will do whatever they can to help you as they would a friend. And then you can ask them for almost anything, but offer something in return. What's the benefit to them?
By contrast, Laurie, on how not to do it, I was at one of those receptions not too long ago, and a man was very definitely using the old style. He walked up to me, handed me his card, said, "Here's what I do. When you need my service, you call me."
Yeah.
And I thought, and I saw him go, probably he handed out 40 or 50 cards at night. I imagine he went home thinking, boy, that phone is going to start ringing now. Mm-hmm. But it's not, because to begin with, it's very clear that this man just doesn't know how people do business now, how they cultivate business. And cultivate is a pretty good word for us to keep in mind.
Yeah, I've been to those events, too, and I've gotten calls the next day. Did you enjoy the coffee sample I gave you? And I thought, what coffee sample, you know? So, I've been to those events, the ones that have the disco ball and it's dark and your name tag is misspelled. I've been to the events where you're asked, everyone, 20 people in a room are asked to get up and give the 30-second elevator speech, and then you leave with no relationship, nothing, and you feel like that was a waste of my time. The only way to feel like it's a good use of your time is to ask somebody questions and get them to talk about themselves. And I have a really good example to illustrate this, if I could share that.
Please do.
You guide me here. Mm-hmm. This hits home. We're all looking for the safe choice when we make a buying decision, and hiring somebody is a purchasing decision. People are looking to hire someone they can trust that's the safe choice. So you have to make it a point to find a way to get them to feel comfortable with you that you're the safe choice. And you do that by asking them questions. I had to make one of the most complex purchasing decisions earlier this year. I had to find in-home help to take care of my mother, who was ill this year, to be with her 24/7.
And you had to make the right decision.
Yes. So I called several agencies, and in each case, they all talked about themselves. We've been in business 20 years, we're insured, we're bonded, call us when you need us.
It's almost like a recorded spiel.
In every case, I felt like they did not care about me, they did not care about my mother. When one agency started asking me very simple questions, what happened to your mother, how is she, I could talk about the situation, and they learned from me that I was looking to purchase peace of mind, and that's the agency I chose. Now, I did talk to one other agency that told me this was her dream job, this was her dream business, and she went on for 30 minutes. And she didn't ask me any questions. I was trying to figure out how to get off the phone. She loved what she did, but it was all about her. And so I did not make that purchasing decision. I hope people listening today can relate that to when they talk to other people in a networking situation.
Wonderful example. Reminding those of you who might be just joining us at the three-quarter hour, this is Bill Lampton, Dr. Bill Lampton, host of the Communication Corner, talking today with our wonderful guest, Lori Davila, a job expert and career expert from Atlanta. And here's what I'd like to pose now for your comments. Let's say, Lori, that we've done a lot of the right things. We've networked, we've used LinkedIn, we've used our referrals that you talk about. We have gotten our resume in good shape. Where does it all lead? In the best scenario, it leads to the interview. You're a football fan, so you can understand when I say this is the Super Bowl of our job search. So describe for us, please, the tips and strategies that you know will greatly increase our likelihood of getting the job because of our interview behavior. What's best for us to do in the interview, and what should we avoid?
Yeah, there's so many tips, but I'll try and give you the top. Number one, go in there and build that rapport. We've talked about that. Build that chemistry. Show them in 30 seconds how excited and enthused you are to be there. You initiate that conversation. Don't be dead and bored and boring, okay? So you tell them why you're thrilled.
Look like you've got a pulse.
There you go.
Yeah.
More than a pulse. Go in there prepared with examples. If you talk about hypotheticals and theories of what you would do if you got the job, you're not doing a good job in selling yourself. The best way is to give specific examples of what you've done in the past, whether you're asked the question or not. Throw it and sprinkle it in throughout the interview. Glad you asked that question. Let me give you an example, okay? People remember stories, so you throw in those examples of how you won back that customer, or how you increased that revenue, or helped that company through a merger that was very, very hard on employees, and how all the employees stayed with you through that process. Give specific examples. A great tip for the ending is to ask the question, what resonated with you during our conversation? The other person will talk about the good points they heard, and when they talk about it, they're selling themselves. You don't have to do any selling for them, and you leave them with that. Follow up with a 90-day plan, or do something that will wow them that your competitors are not doing. Treat them as if they're already your employer.
This is something I hadn't really planned on asking, but it comes to mind, and that is, should you take a PowerPoint to an interview, or should you keep it just person to person?
Person to person, I think. You want to make sure the interviewer feels like they're in charge, but if you start throwing out your PowerPoint, you're taking over the whole conversation. At the end, I think it's best to ask questions during the interview so that you can gather data and then put that PowerPoint together and tell the person at the end, I'm putting this plan together with your permission, and I'd like to send it to you in the next 48 hours now that I've heard all the challenges and needs that you have. So there's a couple of reasons why not to do that during the interview.
Not long ago, I became acquainted with Alan Weiss. He's one of the great marketers in the United States and probably in the world. He told about going someplace to interview for a job as a consultant. He said, I believe there were about a dozen people who interviewed. He went into the interview situation, one of the last ones to interview. He said that he didn't take anything in the way of PowerPoint or technology in there. He said he spent the entire hour and a half asking the man questions about the company.
I love it.
He was hired, and after he was hired, the man said to him, I want to tell you two things. He said, first, you know more about our company than any other applicant who came here.
Mm-hmm.
And all he'd done was ask questions,
yeah.
Laurie. And the second thing he said was, we're hiring you, and guess what? You're the only one that did not use PowerPoint.
Oh, wow. See, I love that story because people think they go into an interview and they're there just to, just to answer questions. And that proves the point that if you ask questions, you make that other person feel special, feel important, feel like you care about them. And when they walk away feeling that, you're hired. You're their new best friend, and they know that they're going to enjoy working with you.
It's sort of a subtle reverse here, that the applicant goes in and instead of being interviewed, becomes the interviewer.
Yes, and I do coach people to go in there with good questions. Not, professional questions that don't build that connection. I mean, you can certainly ask those, and you want to ask those. You know, what's the 5-year plan of the company? Those kinds of questions. But more, Bill, I see you're doing this radio gig. You know, what do you like about what you're doing? That gets to the core motivation of somebody, and you want them to start feeling like they can trust you and share those thoughts with you. That's what we're talking about.
During the interview, we sometimes could hear this question. What's your opinion of your current or most recent boss?
Mm.
How should we answer that one?
Well, you want to honor your boss. You want to speak with him or her in much respect. You talk about their greatest attributes. Now, maybe you don't like your boss. Maybe you don't get along with your boss. But, they have wonderful qualities. Maybe they're just having a bad situation at home or something. You know, really look deep down inside and how can you speak about your boss and honor them and uplift them. And, that is key, really. You have to speak with in that way about your and really feel it.
Yeah, well, what I've read on this is that if you begin complaining about your current boss, the interviewer is going to say this person is a malcontent. If they come here before long, they'll be complaining about me.
Exactly. So the best scenario is you use some of these relationship building skills that we're touching upon today, and you take your boss out for coffee or lunch, and you start getting him to talk about or her getting them to talk about themselves. You've just made a new best friend. And I've seen this happen. I've had people come back to me and say, you know what? I now like my boss. I'm not going anywhere.
Hmm.
This boss is amazing. I just didn't know it.
Sometimes, particularly when we're applying for executive positions, we go through a series of interviews. And when it gets really serious, the interviewer and maybe a vice president or even a CEO could ask us to join them for lunch.
Mm.
Wow. This this is where, again, our behavior, our mannerisms, everything comes into play. What do you advise us on this if you're invited to a meal?
Well, you want to look for certain things like don't order spaghetti and, eat sloppily and don't dress improperly, those kinds of things. You know, brush up on your table manners and those kinds of things. But, you know, that's a good sign. And I would, you know, try and be yourself, but in a professional manner. You know, don't go to those lunches in the shorts and things that we talked about earlier. Be professional. But again, it's all about that relationship connection thing that is so important.
There's another measure that I hear that employers often use in this situation, and that is, how did the applicant treat the wait staff?
Oh, good point. Yeah, absolutely. And the receptionist at their organizations. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to the company itself, you know, you better be treating everybody with the same respect and honor that we talked about.
Yeah, and I've seen people who at restaurants would be very demeaning and domineering towards the wait staff. Well, if they're going to do that to them,
yeah,
particularly when they're being eyed as an applicant, mm-hmm. what are they going to do to the people who they supervise
exactly
at your workplace?
Yeah.
And then again, I guess we ought to bring up the matter of, what if your boss says, hey, would you like to have a cocktail?
Mm. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Because,
do it.
Well, tell us why.
Well, that's just unprofessional. I highly, you know, would say don't do that. That shows potential bad behavior. It's just, you know, you can lose your senses about you and say things that, you know, you don't want to say, and show behaviors you don't want to show, and it's unprofessional.
And it's just as professional and accepted and preferred for you to decline.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got just a couple of minutes. What if the interview leads to, you've interviewed with a lot of different people, and now they bring them all back together, and you need to make a group presentation to them? What do you advise us on that?
I keep going back to this relationship thing, and that, because that's really what I focus on today. There are strategies that you need to put in place to find a way to build a relationship with every person that's part of that panel, if at all possible. And when you come back in that room, you might may reference a couple of them in the beginning. You know, so great that we spent time together. Reference a few of them, as many as possible. Reference what their motivations are, their challenges. It was great to hear, Bob, that you have this passion or this desire to grow this company five times. And I'm really can relate to that, you know. So you're talking personally with several of them at one time. That way they're going to feel like they get you. You get them as a group and individually.
I've had occasions where I would interview with 15 people when I was the applicant during the day, and then we all came together at 6
yeah.
o'clock in the afternoon.
That's a tough
and,
one, yeah.
and you have to face them.
Yeah.
and you'd better know, as you say, how to make it not a stilted situation,
yeah.
but one that's a relaxed but professional conversation.
Yeah. And in that instance, they're probably testing your stamina, I would think.
And particularly when it starts with a 7 a.m. breakfast.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And you meet 10 or 12 or more people.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Suppose we get the job offer. Is it okay for us to try to negotiate the salary or the benefits, or do we just have to take what's offered?
I advise everybody to negotiate. I had a client who loved her salary, and I said, you still need to negotiate. You're showcasing that you're that kind of a person.
You believe in yourself.
You believe in yourself. And she came back with a $20,000 signing bonus. She said, wow. So you always want to negotiate something. It doesn't always have to be salary. It could be benefits, a severance package. It could be a company car. Lots of different things you can negotiate for.
Well, and one of the things about it, this is the last time you're going to have for a year or two to ask for anything.
Probably, yes.
Because when you get into the situation, they're no longer wooing you. And as we all know, salary and benefits are diminishing now. Laurie Davila, it has been magnificent getting your highly professional advice. And I'm going to let our listeners know that they can find your contact information, because later today I will post on my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. I will post all of your contact information. Also on the blog will be the audio of the interview that we've just had. So we hope that all of our listeners are going to tell their colleagues and friends about this and be certain to check into how to contact you, your website, your other information, and your many other offerings. Again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Bill Lampton, the Communication Corner, 678-316-4300. And the station number, 770-538-4744.